Welcome to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so you don't have to. I'm Ludmila, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. And in each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights you can actually use. Today, we're driving into one of the UAE's most underestimated legal traps, loaning money with interest. Why is it important? Because here in the UAE, as many of you would know, private lending is everywhere. Whether it's between friends, family members, business partners, or even companies helping other with temporary liquidity, it is incredibly common. And often, that help comes with strings attached, specifically interest. In fact, it's not unusual to see business owners lending each other money while waiting on invoice, or shareholders injecting temporary funds into companies, or individuals loaning large sums with 12, 18%, or even 36% interest. And free zone companies lending to onshore parties in an informal arrangement. But while this may be common in practice, it is not necessarily legal. And the case we're discussing today is a perfect illustration of how something that feels practical can turn into something very legally explosive. So now let me kind of break it down. So before we go into the case, and the case refers to a specific court here that even in my practical experience surprised me, or the finding or the ruling surprised me, and I'll explain shortly thereafter. I just want to pause and reflect in my very recent, actually, so time as a lawyer here, I must have seen 5 to 10 these kinds of private lending arrangements that came up just literally in the last year or two. So there was, for example, a client who had invested his very hard-earned money. In fact, a yoga teacher invested his very hard-earned money with a company who he knew other friends and associates of his had been investing for several years. He decided to invest with them as well. Why? Because of the interest. And what do you think the interest was? 25% interest. So, who would refuse that kind of an opportunity? And let's just pause there for a second. So why is that kind of an arrangement of interest to someone, wanting to loan money to someone at 25%, some company that's not a bank? Well, it's because banks don't loan money at that kind of interest. Well, I mean, what's the highest interest rate you can get in the bank? 5%, 3%, sometimes depending on the amounts of certain terms and conditions, sometimes maybe it's 7%. But that's maximum interest rate. In most cases, 1% to 2%. So that's the banks, right? So here's an individual who obviously has worked very hard and earned some money, and hearing of everybody else around him investing with some company X, who is now giving 25% versus the bank giving 5%. So it's a large margin. So obviously the appeal is understandable why the client would want to go to the private company and lend them money versus the bank. That's one. And two, because so many of his friends, so many of his associates, and so many of his colleagues have done the same for the last several years, it seemed like a pretty secure and a safe investment. There's some documents that are being signed. And you see, what happens is if you're reputationally wise, if you hear somebody else or several people around you that are doing the same thing, then you build this sort of confidence in that particular entity. So whatever even documents come your way, you don't even really question, do they make sense? Should I go to a lawyer and ask a lawyer to review them to see if there's any kind of hidden issues that need to be worried about, any risk, liabilities? So that's what happens when you have this, you know, a group of friends or a brand that has evolved around a particular entity, and others kind of in that same pot, and everybody's saying, yes, 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 we've been investing with them and we've been receiving our return on investment for the last 6 months, a year, and so. And 25% return on investment sounds like a pretty cool idea. So when you hear this kind of hype around a particular investment, so the propensity is not to read into the fine print. The propensity is just, okay, well, I want to be on that wagon. I want to be on that train. I want to make that 25% interest because obviously the bank only gives me 5. So That's just, you know, a case I'm describing is an actual case from a client, but it is representative of so many other cases that unfortunately we see in our profession naturally. So fast forward, I think 6 months or so, it turns out there's this, the news came out that this company X, and I'm using not the company X formerly Twitter, but a locally based company X, in fact, was closing its doors. All of a sudden, the people that were working there, the managers, the shareholders, you know, nobody really understood exactly who was behind this company, because as part of this investment, and this is the problem with the hype that goes around these kinds of opportunities or transactions, people don't even really ask, so who is behind the company? Who are you? Who are the actual decision maker? Who are the actual stakeholders in this company? So something goes wrong, who do I come after? Who are the people that I'm dealing with? So they don't really do the due diligence of figuring out, okay, so who is in the trade license? Who is the manager? Who are the shareholders? And so, and the person to whom I'm giving money and signing documents, is that person even authorized legally to sign those documents? So all those questions that should take place, unfortunately, these kinds of cases most of the time do not take place. And so fast forward in that particular case, you know, all of a sudden the companies, the rumor mill started generating these news flashes that the shareholders or whoever the decision makers or who were the people representing the company were closing their doors or leaving the country. Some have already left the country. So by the time it's our client's turn came, by the time he went to visit the office was closed, the doors were closed, there was no name tag, and because all he had was a signed document, but without a trade license, without copies of passports, Emirates ID of the people who were actually involved in this, all he had was a few loose pieces of paper and a bunch of WhatsApp correspondences with some people out there. So here he is. He had invested almost 100,000 dirhams with this company, expecting to make within a year 25,000 dirhams on top of it. And all that ended up happening is the company closed the door and there was nobody even to go after. He couldn't even obviously even bring a court case because he didn't even have the documents, the founding documents of the entity who he was working with. But even if he did at that point in time, the company had already, basically the people who were behind it, already run away. So that's, you know, that's one case, and I'll share another one briefly before we go into sort of the nitty-gritty, the legalities of this particular legal practice and why it's important and why we're talking about this today. So recently I had another client, very similar. They decided to invest, just individual, decided to invest in some new business that was developing. So they wanted to be kind of like the seed investors or you know, VC investors, but a very small kind of informal level. So they had given, I think at that point, several $100,000 to a local entity here, again, on the back of, I think, 24% interest, or 26% interest. So that seems to be kind of the mark. And because, you know, for them, they obviously had the money, and they knew keeping that money with the bank, they get, 5% at best. Here, there's 25%. And they tested, by the way. So they did one investment, and they said that, and they got the return on investment, and they decided to do another investment. So they were testing this entity to see if they actually would pay back. And for a while, they were paying back until our client had finally made a huge investment. And at that point, things sort of changed. And there is a delay in the repayment of interest. Then there was an excuse of something else and something else. And ultimately, it got to the point of where, well, sorry, we don't have money right now. We will pay you money later. And that's when, most of the time, that's when clients come to us. And that's when we start looking at the documents and trying to figure out what can we legally do in these kinds of cases. So what does this demonstrate to us? Obviously, just the real nature of things, which is this happens all too often, particularly in places like the UAE, where there's a lot of people with a lot of money. There's also a lot of like entrepreneurs, a lot of people who want to start new projects. And you know, all of these are sort of positive things. But you know, as the usual saying goes, is if something is too good to be true, it's usually too good to be true. So when you have a bank on one side that loans you 5%, and then some private party loans you 25%, so there's a 20% margin, you should ask questions. I mean, how come? How come this company can afford to lend at 25% and the bank cannot? Those are basic logical questions that need to be asked and need to be considered, because in most cases, if anybody could give better return on investment and better terms, it would be the banks, because that's their business. They have a lot of money. So if some other companies are promising you 25% on investment, what does that tell you? It tells you that basically their profit has to be much more than 25% in order for them to pay you back that 25%. These are fairly simple kind of mathematical calculations. But unfortunately, when you have this massive margin, the appeal is too great, and the temptation is too great. And so often these kind of logical questions then get ignored. And then issues happen. That's when the clients come to us. We start looking at the documents. And unfortunately, the documents are not very helpful for many different reasons. But today, what I want to talk about is less about the documents and perhaps lack of documents, a lack of due diligence, but more about the legal foundation on which these kinds of perhaps arguments or claims might or might not be based. So because when you loan money to someone, then there is usually a piece of paper that's called an agreement of sorts, right? And so you expect that the agreement is going to be honored. I give you money, you will give me return on my investment, and ultimately you'll pay me back my interest. So when there is a breach of agreement, this is when you start looking, okay, so how do we enforce this agreement? So can we enforce the agreement? So what's the jurisdiction where we'll be enforcing the agreement? And, you know, what is the penalty? What can I expect? What's the compensation? So what we'll talk about today is exactly that. So this is a real case study, and I will use fictional names, not real names. Just kind of to keep things private and to keep you a little bit entertained. Let me kind of set the stage a little bit. So this case happened. It's a real court case that happened in the UAE, but it was adjudicated not in the local courts, but in another court. It was called the DIFC court, or the Dubai International Financial Center court. So the DIFC, it's not only a free zone, it also has its own independent legal system. So it has its own courts, it has its own laws that are based on common law principles from English law. So it's basically, we have judicial system within another judicial system. So in this particular case, the agreement was subject to the laws of the DIFC courts and the DIFC laws in general. The DIFC laws, if you think about the name itself, is the Dubai International Financial Center. Originally was set to deal exactly with these kinds of cases, financial cases. It's more kind of more sophisticated, more commercial cases, and also by virtue of its formation, the way the DFC court framework was set up is to attract judges from other jurisdictions, very senior judges, and it still is the case. They're very, very qualified, very senior, very esteemed judges on the DFC panels, which means that these are people from. And I've seen so many different commercial cases around the world, and they are, by the way, all foreign judges. So there's judges from England, Lord this, Lord that. There's judges from Singapore, from Australia, from Malaysia. So very, very highly experienced and reputable judges that you'd think have seen it all, right? And so the idea of the DIFC courts is that it's more commercially and business minded. Why I say this is because I thought, out of all the type of jurisdictions or courts where you could potentially try to enforce this agreement we're going to talk about, the DIFC court would be one that would actually enforce this agreement, because it was a commercial agreement. So there was basically two parties. So the lender, we'll call him the Free Zone Freddy Inc., or a company operating out of one of the UAE free zones. So it was a free zone company. Again, Free Zone Freddy Inc., we'll call it Freddy Inc. or Freddy. And then the borrower was a person, an individual, Mr. Sunnyside Up, we'll call him, just to keep things light. And he was a UAE resident and who borrowed from this Freddy Inc. company about $1.5 million. So here what we've got, if you have a free zone company, which is not a DIFC company, by the way, it was a different free zone. We have an individual who is basically considered to be a mainland person, and we have the DIFC courts. But the way they did their agreement is that they made this this loan be subject to the DIFC court's jurisdiction, and perhaps they did it exactly with this in mind, which is what I just told you, is that the DIFC courts, the DIFC judges tend to be a lot more business-centric and more commercial-minded. So they said, okay, this is just a business transaction between two people, so obviously Sunny Side Up borrows money from Freddie Inc. So obviously there's a fairly simple commercial transaction. If anything ever goes astray, the DFC courts will enforce it. And so that, so this is the loan agreement that they drafted that ultimately they made subject to the DFC courts, also included a 24% interest rate. In other words, Freddie Inc., which is the free zone company, would receive 24% interest on this $1.5 million that it lent to Sunny Side Up. And there is additionally, there was a 35% default interest rate. In other words, if Mr. Sunny Side Up defaults, then in addition to the 24%, or there will be, or either there's different ways, sort of different penalties involved, but there's another 35% default interest rate. So the agreement was drafted. We obviously could speculate exactly who drafted it, but somebody perhaps that either was a combination of someone that had some legal background and certainly somebody who thought that they had some kind of financial background to come up with this multi-layered interest repayment. So, and the agreement seemed decently drafted, and it was seemed like a win-win situation. So Freddie Inc. had the money. Mr. Sunny Side Up needed money. So the interest rate upon which Freddie Inc. thought they could actually loan the money was agreed on. And so the agreement was signed. Fast forward a few months later, for a while, and which is, again, very often the case, is that Mrs. Sunny Side Up kept paying the interest rate. And perhaps here I'll take a little break and explain that there's two different parts to repayment of a loan. And so when you have a loan, let's say, give $1 million, right? So the loan is subject to 25% interest. So I give $1 million to Mr. Sunny Side Up. And we agree that he will pay me 25% interest, let's say, every year. So that's a pretty significant amount of money. Let's say 25% let's say every quarter or every month. Every month I receive my 25% interest on my $1 million investment. 1 month goes by, 2 months, 3 months, I think I'm doing great because I'm getting my 25% interest. But don't forget, my $1 million is not with me anymore, right? It is with Mr. Sunny Side Up. So I am receiving what looks like an interest, a profit, but I don't have the $1 million. So, and that's basically how a lot of these loans, end up being repaid, so to speak, right? So for a while, you receive your interest, but ultimately you still expect to receive your principal amount, right? The principal amount is my initial $1 million. So what happens in a lot of these loans, and what happened in this case, is that Mr. Sunny Side Up kept paying the monthly interest. And so for a while, things went well until obviously Mrs. Sunny Side Up fell upon hard times for one reason or another and was either not able or not willing to pay any more than 25% interest on the monthly basis. And so things started kind of going a little bit, obviously more confrontational. So it got to the point where Freddie Inc., the Free Zone company, had to file a court case because not only were they now minus the $1.5 million that they invested, but also they were no longer receiving this monthly interest payments. And so usually under these kinds of arrangements where one party is the one that's sort of loaning the money, it's the agreement, the underlying loan agreement is usually drafted by the party who's actually loaning the money, right? Or who is giving the money. And that's because they want to be in control. So we can presume only the history of it, but this is logical to assume that it would be the Freddie Inc., who would have drafted this agreement. And the reason they agreed on the DIFC jurisdiction in their agreement, even though they're not based in the DIFC, but parties in the UAE can do that, So they can contract into a specific jurisdiction. So the reason they wanted to contract into this jurisdiction is because they figured, okay, this is a fairly simple commercial agreement. So obviously the more business-minded judges of the DFC courts would enforce it. So it got to the point where Freddie Inc. had to file a court case with the DIFC. They sought what? They sought the repayment of the principal, and they sought, obviously, the repayment of the 25% interest that they had not been receiving, plus the 35% penalty. Remember, we talked about the agreement had penalties. So Freddie Inc. obviously thought that they were very smart when they drafted this contract with multiple layers of penalties and defaults and protections for themselves, so what they thought were protections. When the case was being heard by the judge in the DFC court, and by the way, because it is sort of an English-based jurisdiction, the language of the DFC court is English. So at least in that case, they didn't have to translate it into the Arabic. They could argue in English, you know, on the basis of the English-drafted agreement. However, in short, the court dismissed the case ruled against Freddie Inc. In other words, it ruled against the company that loaned money to Mr. Sunnyside Up. Why? Well, for a number of reasons, but ultimately, it held that the underlying agreement, this very fancy, or so they thought, agreement that they had drafted was invalid. The entire agreement is invalid. And what that means, when you have an agreement that's held invalid, it's like, basically, here I have an agreement that outlines a number of different terms, and when the agreement is held invalid, it's just there's no more agreement, basically. This is what you're talking about. So you can no longer rely on anything in this agreement because the underlying agreement is deemed to be invalid, like null and non-existent for all intents and purposes. So in short, that's exactly what the DFC courts in this particular case ultimately decided. Now, how come? Remember, we went back to, it was kind of seemed like a fairly simple transaction between two parties, two willing parties. Freddie had money to give, and Mr. Sunnyside Up wanted money and agreed on the interest rate. Nothing but a purely commercial transaction. So why did the court deem the agreement invalid? Well, a number of reasons. And this is exactly what we're focusing on and doing this specific podcast episode because it is so important to understand the legal ramifications, legal foundation and legal ramifications of doing this in the UAE in particular. So the main argument of the court was that, one of the arguments, for example, is because the Freddie Inc. was a free zone company and as a free zone company, they had a specific license or a limited license in terms of what they could do. And Free Zone Freddie was ultimately prohibited, the type of license that they had, they were prohibited from doing business with UAE residents. And remember, we talked about there's a Free Zone company being Freddie, and then the individual is considered a UAE resident, onshore individual. So, and the type of license that Freddie Inc. had, the type of Free Zone license, prohibited them from doing business with UAE residents unless specific approvals or licenses were in place, which they were not. So in this case, Freddie Inc., which you know, had probably done a bunch of these loans in the past, did not have, legally speaking, were not allowed to transact with UAE residents that were not part of that specific free zone. And that meant that they, by doing this, that they violated their underlying articles of associations and the regulations of the free zone. So this means is that in doing that, in just the transacting between with this individual on this kind of basis, they were violating the free zone's regulations and their own articles of association. In other words, they are breaking the law. So, and in cases like this, when somebody does something against the law, obviously, and then they build an agreement or an understanding on the basis of this, well, you cannot hold that agreement valid because it will ultimately allow you to override the law. Right, or supersede the law, and you cannot do that. So, so therefore, any kind of agreement that ultimately is based on broken laws or violation of laws will not be deemed valid. So, in this case, In short, Freddie Inc. was operating illegally by transacting with a party that was not part of its free zone, and therefore was not, they were not allowed to deal with anybody other than a specific entity within the free zone. So there was violation number one, right? So they were not even allowed, whatever the agreement might have been or not. Like it wasn't so much. For now, we're not talking about the agreement stuff. It's just the transaction between the two parties. Just that transaction alone was already against the rules because the free zone company could not operate or transact directly with an onshore individual because of the type of license that this free zone company had. So that's argument number one, or that's basic reasoning number one. The second reasoning is that Freddie Inc. ultimately engaged in what's called a regulated financial activity. Why? Because it loaned money with interest, right? So it's a financial activity. It gave money, so that's a financial services. Not only that, it gave financial assistance with interest. So that is a financial, not only a financial activity, but it's also a regulated financial activity, which means that in order for any kind of legal entity to be doing that business, they need to be regulated by specific government authorities. So in the UAE, depending on where the company is, it's most definitely the UAE Central Bank. It could be ESCA, which is the Securities Commission and Exchange Commission. It could be, if a company is in the DIFC, it could be the DIFC authority, and so on and so forth. So different financial institutions, ultimately, they would need to have granted a license to this entity to be providing these financial services because these types of financial services are considered regulated. Okay, so, and in this case, Freddie Inc. was just a simple kind of a holding company, actually, a free zone holding company. It certainly did not have any approvals from any of the financial authorities. And that's also for many different reasons, but it's very difficult to obtain approvals from financial authorities, and that's because financial authorities only give approvals to those who actually are in the business of providing financial services and therefore have the right qualifications, experience, certifications, deposit guarantees, and so on and so forth. So to have a financial company in the UAE that is licensed by the relevant financial authorities, it's a pretty serious enterprise. Now, let me kind of pause there for a second. Why is that the case? And that's exactly for the reason the examples that I gave early on. So we go back to the beginning of my discussion, and that is, it's just to protect the public. So the government has created this framework, legal framework, for anything to do ultimately with financial transactions where companies or individuals use money of somebody else, from somebody else, that those individuals and those companies are properly regulated. And they need to be regulated. Why? Because people's lives and people's means and people's financial savings are at stake. So it's ultimately there designed, these kind of regulations designed to protect the public, to protect the people, to protect the consumers. And this is why any kind of financial services are regulated by the government, and that's exactly just to avoid these kind of incidents that I described with the yoga teacher and another client, who all of whom have invested their fairly significant savings only because of the allure of the high interest rate, but ultimately could not enforce the repayment of that loan because they were dealing with the wrong entity. And this is why investing with the bank, perhaps you don't get the super high rate, the 25% rate, but at least your money is safe and secure for the most part. Certainly the margin is huge in terms of the potential profit, but the risks are more or less minimal. So this is why this requirement of anything to do with lending money, or trading with financial instruments, needs to be regulated at official government level and the various financial institutions that basic law exists. Now, in this case, because Freddie Inc. obviously was not properly licensed, it was, among other things, violating what's called the UAE Penal Code or criminal law. And that's because in the UAE Penal Code, there is specific provisions that ultimately make lending money with interest without having proper license is a criminal offense. So, and it's a criminal offense that's punishable with very specific penalties. For example, it's subject to at least 1 year in jail and a minimum fine of 50,000 dirhams. So what does it tell you? It tells you that if someone who is not a licensed, properly licensed financial institution, that's not, and when I say licensed, I don't mean just licensed by the free zone. I mean licensed to be providing these financial kinds of activities, financial regulated financial services, central bank, in among other things. If they're not, if they don't have those licenses, they are breaking the law. And they, in fact, not just, it's not just a civil law, they're breaking, criminal law, which means that there's fairly significant repercussions. And so once again, now we go back to the agreement. So how can you deem the agreement on which this particular illegal transaction was based legal? You can't. So that's exactly why the court in this case decided, well, I mean, one, the company didn't even have the authority to deal with this individual because of the type of license that it had. And then two, the underlying transaction, even let's say if the individual was, if even if the first argument was not present, and let's say they were both onshore individuals or parties, or they were both within the same free zone, still, because the underlying transaction was legally flawed, or because Freddie Inc. did not have the proper financial license to conduct this kind of transaction, therefore the agreement is invalid. Now, because it's invalid, the court didn't even need to get into, well, is 25% interest legal? Is it reasonable? Is it fair? How about the 35% default penalty? Remember, we also talked about that. The court didn't even have to go into this because, as I said before, when the agreement is deemed void, the entire document just disappears. It's not like you can cherry pick certain provisions and then and apply others. No. So in this particular case, that was basically the case had to be dismissed because the party that brought the case, which is Freddie Inc., wanted to enforce the agreement. And because there was nothing to enforce, the court basically said, well, the case is more or less dismissed. So there it is. And that's basically kind of how you know, this DIFC judge reasoned and relied obviously on all sorts of regulations. Like, and he looked pretty closely into the central bank regulations, the DFSA regulations, and into the various regulations within the free zone, the ADGM and DIFC. And all of those regulations were very clear in terms of defining this kind of transaction with Freddie and Sunnyside, Mr. Sunnyside Up, as a financial transaction. So they would have normally fallen under those particular laws, except that they were not regulated by those institutions. So as a result, the case was dismissed. And Freddie Inc. was not able to not just kind of, you know, argue or get his interest rate. He couldn't even argue the principal amount. Because again, the agreement is not there, and because this case in the DFC was for enforcement of an agreement, right? So the legal cause of action on which Freddie Inc. was relying was the agreement itself. So enforcement of the agreement. So when the judge deemed that agreement invalid, there was nothing else to go by in terms of that particular case. So does that mean that? And you know, obviously, those who have dealt with the DFC courts, there's pretty significant legal fees and court fees that you have to pay. The DFC court. So here we have Freddie Inc. who had loaned $1.5 million and spent quite significant amounts of money in the DFC courts trying to litigate repayment of not just his principal but also the various interest rates, the 25 and 35%. Didn't get his principal, did not get his 25%, did not get his 35%, and instead paid a lot more money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, in legal fees to try to litigate this case, only to ultimately walk away with nothing. So that's basically, and you know, why this was, I will tell you, honestly, even for me, it was a bit of a surprise because for the reasons I mentioned earlier, is the DFC courts usually are deemed to be more commercially minded. But in this case, the judge was very methodical, very thorough in his kind of comprehensive look of the UAE legal infrastructure. So yes, there's the DFC laws, but the DFC exists within the broader UAE laws. And the UAE laws require for any of these kinds of financial transactions to be regulated. And if it's not, then the defaults back to the UAE penal code or the criminal law that penalizes transactions under the criminal law. So, and the criminal law applies the same equally to all companies and all parties in the UAE, even within the free zone. So it's a very interesting, a very methodical and well-reasoned decision. So that was, even to me, was a bit of a surprise, because I thought that, maybe they'd be a little more superficial and kind of focus only more on the business side of the agreement. Well, but obviously the ultimate reasoning and the rationale is absolutely 100% in line with the UAE laws and how how local courts would look at it as well. You cannot argue any other way. And this is perhaps a reminder to all those who are thinking of getting into these transactions: have your agreement checked by lawyers who understand how these kinds of transactions and these sort of agreements are ultimately enforced or viewed by local authorities. Because maybe this agreement would have been fine in a foreign jurisdiction somewhere in the West, but here in the UAE, because of this, the sort of whole ecosystem of the laws that we have in place, it's against the law. And so had they come to me, and I've had a lot of clients come to us with very similar similar propositions and similar so-called agreements. They're very often, they're kind of embarrassing to even call them agreements, and people are all too willing to invest a lot of money on the back of these so-called agreements. But our advice has always been the same. It's like, well, this is technically speaking, what you're doing is not legal. So therefore, whatever agreement or not, whatever you invest, you basically just have to rely on their own goodness and on trust that they will return that money to you. Because if they don't, you will have to go to court. And when you go to court, this agreement is not going to be enforced. So what does that mean in general? So does it mean, let's go back to the case. Does it mean that in Freddie Ng's case, does it mean that he completely lost all his money or the company lost all of its money? No. Why? You know why? Because there's another legal theory that they could rely on to try to reclaim the at least the principal amount that they have invested. Remember, the loan or the interest rate and the penalties, they're against the law because they were not properly licensed. So basically, out of this financial structure that that had Freddie Inc. loan $1.5 million plus had this different interest rate. So basically, anything to do with interest rates or penalties was basically taken out of the equation. But there's still the principal amount that Freddie Inc. did take out of his pocket and gave it to Sunnyside Up. So does that mean that now Sunnyside Up benefited from this unlawful transaction and now became rich because both parties ultimately, I violated the law? So that would also not be fair. So now there is another legal theory on which Freddie Inc. could rely on to try to reclaim the principal amount. So, and that's called unjust enrichment principle. So that particular legal theory would have to be argued maybe through the DFC, not even through the DFC courts, would actually have to be perhaps argued in local courts. Because again, the DFC court had that jurisdiction about the DFC court, but if the agreement is deemed invalid, maybe even the jurisdiction is deemed invalid. So, but Freddie Inc. did have another option, which is to file a case at a local court for what's called unjust enrichment. And that is, okay, fine, whatever it is I've done, the concept of unjust enrichment. So I've done something wrong. I tried to get a little, bigger bite of the apple than I should have. Fine. But I still lost money. I still gave my own money from my own pocket to Sunnyside Up. And that concept of unjust enrichment, in other words, Sunnyside Up in this case, would have been unjustly enriched by virtue of $1.5 million dollars, and still all stemming from this otherwise unlawful transaction. So that's not fair for him to keep that money either. So the courts here would rely not on a breach of contract or enforcement of a contract legal theory, but rather on the unjust enrichment legal theory, which is also part of the UAE laws. So in terms of the principal amount, that amount is recoverable, but it's not recoverable on the basis of the contract. It's recoverable purely on the unjust enrichment principle, which is a different source of law. But anything to do with interest and all that was not recoverable, obviously. So that's basically the case for you, and I think that demonstrate, I guess, many things. Some of them are very human, some of them are very nuanced, some of them are very legal. A human aspect of it is that everybody wants to make money, right? So the more money you can make, you know, the easier, the happier life is, the sort of thought goes. And so that appeal of, well, I can get more money by investing with some no-name party than if I were to just keep it in the bank is all too real. It's very human. We understand that. But as the saying goes, you know, so if something is too good to be true, in most cases, it is too good to be true. So you need to be very aware and resist the temptation. And I tell you this from a legal standpoint, because I see too many cases like that. So there's that human kind of motivation, which we understand, but you also need to know that if, you know, if you're going to do that, then just accept that. Don't even bother with an agreement, basically, because it's not going to be valid. So you, if you're going to give somebody money, just then only do it if you really trust them. And if you trust them, you don't even need a fancy agreement to do it. So that's basically, that's a human element of it. And obviously, from a legal standpoint, now you know, anything to do with financial transactions, financial loans, instruments, and, you know, ultimately, where you're using people's money or relying on people's money, that's a regulated financial activity. And you can only do that if you have proper licenses. And if you don't, then once again, then just buy, beware kind of a thing that you will not be able to enforce your rights. So that's, you know, that's obviously the legal side of it. And the nuances is that, well, it's, you know, you had all these different agreements and you had all these expectations. And in this particular case, obviously people thought that they had sought very good legal and financial advice by having this sophisticated looking agreement. But ultimately that sophisticated looking agreement was not worth the paper that was written on. So in summary, so lending money with interest in the UAE is not a casual activity. It is a regulated business. You cannot lend with interest just because it is a one-time deal. Even then, it's not enforceable. And you cannot rely on free zone licenses to justify deals with onshore residents. Even if you document it, if it's, you know, illegal and unenforceable. And so, as I said earlier, legal remedies may exist to recover your money, but not the interest in a, if done incorrectly. So, you know, this case is just another wake-up call for anyone who thinks lending money with interest is just a handshake away. The UAE legal system is clear. Licensing structure and regulatory compliance are essential. So, on this note, that's it for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you would like, and you like more of this and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website. That is lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.